Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Well, look, the people of America know that the Republicans are in charge of this government right now. They have the majority in the House, the majority in the Senate. Obviously, President Trump is in the White House. They control everything. This is their shutdown, not ours.
I spoke with Adelita last night, and she doesn't have keys to her office. She is unable to hire staffers, and she is unable to adequately represent her constituents. And that is absolutely outrageous.
We've not had a full session. She deserves to have all the pomp and circumstance that everybody else does. She deserves to have a full House of members and go down and do the speech and have her family and friends in the balcony. That hasn't been scheduled because we haven't had that session yet.
We have no screens in the TSA checkpoints, which is where the video was requested to be played. So we have no capability to play it. If we did have screens, though, technically it would be advertising, and our advertising policy prohibits political speech of any type in the airport.
Instead of giving us the records, they filed a lawsuit against us for asking for public records. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
And with me to talk about the continuing saga over a congressional swearing-in, controversy over a leaked group chat, and more, our former state school superintendent Jaime Molera of the firm Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
And former State House Minority Leader Reginald Boulding. Reginald, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Jaime, let me start with you. We keep hearing about Congresswoman-elect Adelita Grijalva not becoming officially Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva. What do you make of this continuing saga, the fact that she keeps saying and Democrats keep saying, OK, she won. Now the election has actually been certified. She should be sworn in. And House Speaker Mike Johnson saying, not quite yet.
Well, first off, I'm always surprised that you ask a question that doesn't get at the fact that politics actually happens in Washington, D.C.
I know.
But, you know, the speaker's retort has been that, well, wait a minute. You know, we're facing a little thing called a government shutdown. None of the Democrats are engaged to try and get it open. Every Republican has voted for that. So that's what the line is, and he's sticking to it. Whether or not, you know, Alita's ability to become a congresswoman officially makes any difference in all that travails, I think the speaker's just saying, look, if the Democrats are going to be doing this to us, then why should I go back and do something for the Democrats? And I think a lot of his caucus members probably like the fact that he's doing that.
Yeah, Reginald, now that the election has been certified, Attorney General Chris Mays said this week that she might sue Mike Johnson if he doesn't swear her in or come up with a plan to swear her in the not-too-distant future. As Jaime said, I'm shocked that there's politics happening here.
Yeah, no, this is actually, I think, a pretty dangerous, a situation that we have here. You know, Representative-elect Grijalva, she was certified. You know, the people spoke. She won over 70% of the votes in the race. And, you know, her duly elected constitutional right is to be sworn in and represent the people of her district. You have over 800,000 people who don't have a congresswoman. So at any time when you have, if political games have the ability to override the will of the people, that's an issue, right? You know, Speaker Johnson, his job is temporary. You know, the Constitution, that's long lasting. That's history. That's forever. He doesn't get to decide whether or not the people of Arizona have the ability to have a representative. And also, it's putting a lot of people's, you know, livelihoods in jeopardy. You know, if you're a staffer, you know, you're ready to get the work, you're not getting a paycheck. Do you live, you know, do you have a place to stay? I mean, this is really difficult.
Jaime, do you buy into the narrative that a lot of the Democrats are saying, including Congresswoman-elect Grijalva, that the real reason that Mike Johnson is not swearing her in is because she would be the final vote on the discharge petition to release the Epstein files?
The signature on the petition,
yeah,
to get that moving. Well, you know, the Epstein issue, I'm not so sure if it resonates as much anymore. But again, there's politics going on here. And that's a great talking point that the Democrats are throwing out there, and they're scoring political points with it. So they continue to really push that narrative. But again, you know, you have all these lawsuits that are going on. Attorney General Mays is, and the question is also asked, who hasn't she sued? She's had more lawsuits. I think she's up to like 27 now or something. So these kinds of things always get played out in the court of public opinion. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I would agree that constitutionally that's the thing that people should focus on, that we should try and honor, you know, our democratic structures as much as possible. But again, you know, hopefully we can get through this budget mess too. Even if she was able to bring on staff, they still couldn't get paid because of the government shutdown. So we just got to get through that.
So, Reginald, obviously the reason that Mike Johnson is saying, as Jaime alluded, that he's not swearing her in is that the government is shut down and Democrats need in the Senate need to vote to reopen the government. Do you see an end to this shutdown? I mean, it doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot of discussion happening, negotiations happening on a way to potentially get the sides together to reopen the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that Speaker Johnson gave is just not the reality. I mean, you know, he could, you know, he has the ability to bring the House into session and to swear in Grijalva, and that has absolutely nothing to do with what the United States Senate, which is a whole separate body, is negotiating on. You know, the House, they've already, you know, passed, you know, their continuing resolution, which, you know, Democrats rightfully, you know, I feel like they have a great case to fight back. I mean, you have families who are going to have their insurance premiums tripled. I mean, when you look at insurance costs right now, that is a significant deal. And to tell everyday voters, like, your insurance costs could potentially triple, I think that's something that people, you know, want Democrats to fight for. And that is totally separate from Representative Grijalva being sworn in. The negotiation is with the U.S. Senate and the parties that be, and it has nothing to do with her being able to, you know, be sworn in.
Jaime, we know that the Trump administration and many Republicans in Congress and beyond are blaming Democrats, especially in the Senate, for the shutdown. We heard that specifically from Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem this week. Mm-hmm. There was a video, you know, if you walk through like Sky Harbor, when you get to TSA, usually the DHS secretary is on there explaining, like, here's what TSA is doing. Here's right. Why you can't have like a giant water bottle coming through TSA full of liquid with you. But this video specifically blames Democrats for the shutdown and any inconvenience that travelers might have. Sky Harbor says, we're not playing that. A number of other airports.
Gateway also.
Gateway, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tucson, we heard somebody from Tucson Airport saying, we don't have screens at TSA, but even if we did, we wouldn't play this. I'm curious what you make of the fact that they recorded this whole new video specifically blaming Democrats, you know, in what is normally just sort of an informational kind of video.
Well, again,
I know politics, you know, at play here.
You got to understand that both sides are trying to create a narrative that at the end of the day gets the American public to be very aggressive against either political party.
The other side.
And so right now, the Democrats have talking about health care. They're saying this is our number one issue. We will not do a continuing resolution. Even when in the past, as we all know, Chuck Schumer has said we should do these continuing resolutions and not deal with these other issues until that gets done. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hypocritical of what's being talked about now versus what they've talked about in the past. Trump administration, yeah, doing a video saying, well, play this in every airport and I'm going to be there telling you that the Democrats are the problem for this whole thing. That's a little silly. I wouldn't argue that. And I can see why a lot of airports, especially Sky Harbor, saying, well, wait a minute, this is not about the politics. We just don't want any politics involved. And I think if you were to do that, I can imagine what kinds of things in the future might be done. It's crazy what if that were a precedent. When the Democrats come back in power, you know, a lot of people aren't going to want to hear what they have to say, too.
Do you think it's good politics for the Trump administration to be trying to do this?
I don't know if it's good politics, Mark, but it's politics. And I think that they're just hammering that message home that this is not – we have every single Republican that's voted for this to continue government, to get people back into work, make sure that everybody's getting what they need to get as far as their pay. So they're just continuing to pound that narrative. And I think it's starting to have some – at least in polling that I've seen, starting to have some resonance, but they're not going to get off that message anytime soon.
At least not at Sky Harbor. I mean, Reginald, do you see it as good politics from the Trump administration to continue to try to hammer this narrative in literally any way they possibly can, any venue they can?
Yeah, I mean, I used the word dangerous and before, and I would argue it is dangerous again. You know, obviously we know that there's a intersection between, you know, politics and government, but just imagine that anytime you walked into, you know, the Department of Transportation, or you know, you walk into you know, any state agency, you have playing in that state agency political advertisements for whatever party is in control, whether it's at the state level, the local level, the federal level. I mean, if we want to tone down, you know, the partisanship that we see in our country, the last thing that everyday voters want to do is walk into any government institution and have a video that's saying hooray for Republicans or hooray for Democrats. I think like this, I wouldn't say it's, you know, censorship, them not playing it. I think it's common sense that they shouldn't do it. And the reality is that, you know, the public, I think this could actually come back to hurt the Trump administration or any administration that is trying to use the government resources to play political games.
I mean, let me start with you with a story from Politico this week that exposed a group chat among a number of members of young Republicans across the country, mostly in New York, a couple of them here in Arizona, that had some pretty nasty things to say, some racist things, anti-Semitic things, sexist things, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We saw the Vice President J.D. Vance basically say, you know, these are kids who are, you know, saying stupid things as most kids do. It should be pointed out, though, that, you know, these are not kids. These are people in their 30s
adults,
who have, like,
right.
legit jobs, right. Some of whom are elected office, you know, state officers in Vermont, I believe. So I'm curious, like, what you make of the, like, the fact that this existed, and it seemed as though the people involved knew that if it got out, they'd be in some trouble. But also the reaction to it is, like, this is maybe not such a big deal.
I disagree with that, though, Mark, because I think that a lot of the organizations – came out and said, you're not working for us anymore.
True.
Whether they're congressmen that have relieved staffers, Center for Arizona Policy just fired one of their mm-hmm. staffers that was involved in this. You have organizations that say we're disbanding the Young Republicans because of that reason. So I don't think people have taken it lightly.
The vice president, though, seems to be not taking
point,
it heavily.
His point was a little bit different. He talked about how where was the moral outrage of the Democrats that are coming after Republicans when certain Democrats were talking about for the execution of certain congresspeople or congressional leaders. So I think that there was more of a different point that he was trying to make. But certainly criticizing these individuals for doing what they did is warranted. And certainly a lot of them losing their positions, I think, is warranted. We shouldn't countenance this kind of behavior. It's ugly. It's stupid. It's just something that I know the Republican Party is taking steps internally. Even the state director said, we don't want these kinds of people working for us.
Reginald, there are so many conversations and articles written about the need to, you know, quote unquote, tone down the rhetoric, turn down the temperature, you know, stop the vitriolic commentary. And yet it doesn't seem as though that's really happening. I mean, maybe it is. And, you know, cases like this are sort of isolated incidents. But we seem to keep hearing about people writing and texting and saying things like this.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where you have to have, you know, leaders who are willing to say, hey, this is wrong. They shouldn't have done it, you know, full stop and move on. Right. But what we consistently see and hear from a lot of leaders is, well, they did it, too. You know, it's not just us. It's you know, it's Democrats too, or it's Republicans too. Like and this is what people are exhausted with. You know, they want to make sure that. If you're a leader, if you see something that was said or was done that was immoral, that you can speak on it and you can say it full stop. I mean, I think this instance here really is an issue that I think that that Republicans are going to have to really, you know, make sure that it doesn't reinforce some stereotypes that people already believe about, you know, Republican Party, whether it's issues with diversity, inclusion, or image control, because those are, you know, extremism. That is what some folks, you know, associate with Republicans. And I think that this was enough of an issue that institutions said, hey, we need to distance ourselves, you know, from this. But I think at the end of the day, it was an issue. I think that the organizations that, you know, fired those individuals, distanced themselves. Yeah, absolutely. They did the right thing. And I think that now we have to really have leaders who are willing to say it wasn't right.
Jaime, I'm wondering if it says anything to you that the people involved in this group chat recognize that what they were saying shouldn't get out. Like, I think they're, I'm going to paraphrase, but basically, like, we're in a lot of trouble if this ever got out, if anybody saw what we were doing. And yet they still did it.
Right.
So I wonder, and this is not necessarily just a Republican issue or a Democratic issue, but just sort of in the world of politics that people recognize that, okay, we shouldn't say this, we shouldn't do it, but we're going to do it anyway.
Well, especially a lot of those young people, after witnessing what happened with Charlie Kirk, should have said, well, wait a minute, you know, let's take a step back and think about what we're saying and doing, because it leads to these kinds of horrible, disgusting things. And so, and it happens on both the left and the right. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be a recognition. And I'm pleased that a number of organizations, like I said, have stepped up and say, look, we're just not going to accept that. And if you were representing me as one of my staffers, you're not going to be there anymore. And so that does send a very powerful message, and I think it has sent a powerful message. But I think both sides need to realize, both sides of the aisle, that that kind of extremist rhetoric does lead to really ugly things. And we just need to say, nope, we're not going to deal with that kind of stuff anymore.
Reginald, could this be – I hate to use the phrase inflection point, but could this be sort of an incident that maybe changes things a little bit, that gets people to recognize we just – shouldn't be doing this or saying this or writing it or texting it or whatever?
No, I don't think it's going to be an inflection point. I wish it would be, right? You know, it's one of those things where you take two steps forward, three steps back. You have institutions, you have, you know, congressional leaders, you know, you have folks who are letting go of staff, and then you have the vice president say, you know, what he said. You know, I mean, it's like one of those things where we have to just you know, ask ourselves, you know, where is the end, right? I mean, like, the partisanship is literally at an all-time high. You think, you know, you had opportunities for these, you know, watershed moments where you could have brought the country back together and things that are happening, but it hasn't happened. So I'm not sure what, you know, what's going to be that inflection point. I don't think this is going to be it. But my hope is that, you know, we find a way to really have leaders who are willing to focus on that.
Okay. Guys, before we wrap up, I want to ask you about the third quarter campaign finance numbers in the governor's race. I'm just talking about the money on hand. Karen Taylor-Robeson, about $978,000. Andy Biggs, about $630,000. David Schweikert, since he got into the race recently, it hasn't filed yet. Governor Hobbs, almost $5.5 million. Jaime, obviously the GOP primary is going to be pretty heavily contested, potentially unpleasant for the people involved and maybe those watching it. Anything stand out to you about the numbers that we're seeing so far?
I think for Andy Biggs, a lot of people didn't think that he would have as much compared to Karen Taylor-Robeson. And the thing that I've always told folks about the Republican primary, what Biggs has going for him is going to be very powerful in that he has Turning Point, has indicated they're going to be all in for Congressman Biggs. And I think Turning Point's presence with everything that just happened is going to be very, very important. And then you combine that with Club for Growth, which is also a national organization with a lot of deep pockets. So that bodes well, I think, for Congressman Biggs, particularly if he's able to demonstrate he can raise money on his own. I think that adds a lot.
Well, you kind of wonder how much the actual candidate fundraising might matter in this primary, because you have Karen Taylor-Robeson obviously has a lot of personal money. And as you say, Andy Biggs has a lot of sort of institutional money that will come his way. Presumably David Schweikert will have outside money as well. Does that maybe make the individual campaign fundraising numbers less relevant here, do you think?
I do, especially nowadays with the two organizations I mentioned, Turning Point and Club for Growth. They have enormous influence in the Republican Party. We know that.
Yeah.
I mean, Turning Point has been a very well-regarded. If you look at the turnouts that have occurred since the Kirk assassination, it's been massive. And all of those, by and large, are Republicans. And so they're going to be the ones in the Republican primaries. And I think that bodes well for Congresswoman Biggs. I really do.
Benjamin, what do you think? Last minute or so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, looking at the fundraising numbers of the individual candidates, I think it's nice because it gives us something to report on. But it's also the numbers that we don't see, you know, from these organizations that are going to definitely make the difference. But I do think from a candidate standpoint, it does show, do you have the organization in place in order to actually be competitive? Can you set yourself up for success so these organizations want to throw down for you?
Sort of an indicator of maybe other things relative to the campaign.
Absolutely.
Correct. Interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Reginald Boulding, Jaime Molera, thanks you both for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Be here.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.